I learned a long time ago that anytime I have an opportunity to see any kind of, you know, well-renowned or well-regarded musical act, it does not matter if I'm a fan of the band or the artist. It does not matter if I'm even a fan of the genre. If I've got the opportunity, I probably should go, because I'm going to end up adoring it just because, again, seeing people that are so good at their craft is, there's something about it that I love to see. Even if I wouldn't ever listen to it on my own, I think the example comes to mind right now. I inadvertently ended up seeing Lamb of God a couple of years back. And I did not leave a Lamb of God fan. I did not go in a Lamb of God fan. It's a little bit heavier than what I like. But for those 45 minutes where I was watching them on stage, I absolutely was a huge fan. It was a phenomenal show.
It's funny you mention them. I've seen them live, I think, 2007. I've got two brothers. I'm one of three. And our oldest was waving the heavy metal flag at an early age. So we had I'm the middle, and my younger brother, we had no chance. We were going to be some version of metalheads. And so
that was going to happen, yeah.
So that's kind of what I got into starting around, 14, 15. And then into early 20s, I branched out into independent artists. But I love, and if you listen to prior episodes, I've had people from the metal genre on. I love to have them on here, but yeah, Lamb of God, wow, that's what I wasn't expecting that one, but they put on quite a performance.
Oh, it was stellar. I mean, it was so tight, and I saw them with full disclosure, the reason I went was because Trivium was on the bill, and like I've got an opportunity to see Trivium. I didn't get to see them back in the day when I was really into them. You know what, I might as well go to the show. And they were opening for as I said, Lamb of God and also Megadeth. And, well, first of all, it was a phenomenal show. All of the acts were phenomenal. They were so tight. Lamb of God, like you're saying, that show, man, it was so, they were musically tight. The effects were phenomenal. They were so locked in together. The performances were just top of their craft. And like I said, I didn't leave and immediately go start listening to Lamb of God, but, I did thoroughly enjoy them for that set, and I did actually leave and start listening to Megadeth. I was not a fan of Megadeth before that, and now I have very strong feelings about Dave Mustaine, so go figure.
David Ellefson used to play bass, a longtime bassist for Megadeth. He's got a podcast I've been listening to. I should probably drop recommendations in the middle of these episodes more often, but yeah, the David Ellefson show, it's great. Even if you don't know much about Megadeth or that type of music, it's really neat stories from the years and years and the miles that he spent.
I'm absolutely gonna have to check that out, but I'm sure he's got all kinds of stories.
But I can definitely hear Ghost River Revival, a little bit heavier, especially on Medicine Woman. Natasha Nix, I didn't want to go this far in the episode without mentioning Natasha. How did you get, did she reach out to you? How'd you get involved with this project?
So it's, man, that's a long story. Natasha is another one of those people that is just phenomenal. And I'm, you know, every time we, and I've got three shows with that band coming up the next 3 days, we're hitting the road after you and I get off the call, actually. Feel so phenomenally lucky to get to work with her. So the guitar player in that band and myself have known each other for quite a while. We've worked together off and on for over a decade now, and we were in a band about a decade ago that we'll say that it's not the band that was necessarily the problem, although it had its problematic moments, but there were experiences with that band that have really soured me on major label interactions. We'll just leave that at that. But he and I, we worked together for years in that, and off and on through the years, we continue to work together. So Natasha, she used to come to a lot of shows. She was always in the scene. She was always around. And none of us had a clue that she could sing, right? Because she didn't ever sing. So when COVID happened and the world shut down, she decided, I'm going to start singing. And as restrictions started to lift and a few things started to open back up, she started going to do karaoke. And the guitar player I mentioned talked her into, doing an acoustic thing with him. He plays, she sings, and I said, there's no way that that you're keeping this to yourself, right? We're going to go ahead and flesh this out. And it's hilarious because at the time, the guitar player and I were in another project that we were pursuing seriously. And unfortunately, things fall apart. They don't always stick. But we were going to start something with Natasha that was, it was going to just be a, for funsies, right? It was going to be, we're going to play some covers we like. We're going to do some theme shows we want to do. And it's going to be low stress, and we're just going to do it for fun. And our first show, we did about, I want to say, 20 covers of 90s country songs. Everything from Neon Moon up to some Shania Twain stuff. And it was a disaster. It was a disaster. It was so. The first set was great, but the last set was so bad. And we left and we said, okay, now hold on. What was working here? What was not working here? Because we really should have stopped after that show. That second set was so rough. But we had, as I had mentioned, the guitar player and I, we had another project that was doing things at that time. And we had a few gigs that were on the books before that band fell apart. And when that band, just kind of started to fall apart, I called the promoter and I said, all right, well, here's the deal. These shows are in, and it was like two or three shows back to back. So these shows are in 3 weeks. I can either give you the bad news that we've got to cancel, or I can give you this other band that half of this act is in anyway. And they said, okay, well, we'll take the other act that half of you are in. And like I said, this was actually before we played that disastrous show. So I had no idea how rough that back half of that show was going to be. So after that terrible country show, we had about 3 weeks to figure out, well, what to do. And we started pooling what we knew together. Like I said, the people in this band, they've been playing, off and on that for quite some time. And we just sat down, we said, all right, here's the list of common things we know. And what we had in common was a lot of soul, a lot of old school R&B, a lot of and a lot of 90s rock. And we said, okay, we've got a set list out of this. We'll go do it. And we went, we did it. It was fantastic. It went so much better. People really enjoyed it. And we came home and we said, okay, well, that went really well, and we don't want it to stop. And here we are. We didn't stop. But yeah, that's how that started. It was just going to be those two doing an acoustic thing, and then I just kind of barged my way in. But
I love these stories on how these unlikely pairings happen, and then I guess we're a band now.
The drummer in that band, we really had been wanting to work with him off and on for some time, but he had we were under the impression that he had basically gotten burned out on music. He was playing with this fantastic soul band, man. And then he left them for reasons that, like I said, sometimes things, people have differences, and life happens, and you just fall off.
This is
And we thought
Michael
he'd get,
Rogers.
that is Michael Rogers, yeah. And we we thought that he was not going to be attainable because, man, he was working like 60 hours a week for a extermination company, and it just seemed like he was not going to have time or anything like that. And But somehow we got him talked into coming in and sitting down, and it's just falling together real nicely. And then, you know, it's been great. And then, you know, the guy that plays keys and sax with us, Taylor Cheatwood, we've known him off and on for years. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough that I've recorded with him in the past for other projects. And that's a lot of the networking. That's just how it works is, oh, hey, I know this person. I've done things with them before. I think they might be interested. Let's give them a call, see what happens. And then, yeah, you end up with something like this, which is, again, very different from the Lindy situation, which was she knew she wanted to work with Grant Walden as the producer there. And she just said, put me a band together to do these songs. So he just picked up the phone and started calling people. And so even though a couple of us had worked, I don't think any of us had worked with everyone in that room, but all of us had worked with somebody in that room before. And yeah, you can get on any kind of streaming platform and hear how that turned out. But yeah, it's just different ways. There's different approaches to get it handled, right? More than one way to skin a cat, they say.
And then, so Dan, like about a year later, your first live performance as a group with Ghost River Revival at the Lava Room in Florence. And then, you've attracted a local following that likes to come out and see you guys perform.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate in that regard. We only had our first show, like you're saying, a little over a year ago now. And that was that terrible country ordeal that I told you about.
I was going to ask if you played some John Anderson, maybe Straight Tequila Night. I always like
Seminole
Wind
did.
Is a good one.
I know we did Seminole Wind because we, every once in a while, whenever we are in a situation where we're trying to figure out if we need to throw something else in the set with, we still joke about breaking that out, even though we have no intention of doing it.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, we absolutely did. We did Seminole Wind. I still got the set list around somewhere.
I'm so glad that y'all have that.
Actually.
Oh, wow. I just threw it out there because I've always loved that song. I feel like John Anderson kind of gets lost in the shuffle as the years go on, unfortunately. But I remember being in, you know, early 20s, hanging out in a bar, if the room was getting too quiet or the jukebox, the songs ran out, nobody was pumping quarters in it. Seminole Wind was one of those songs where I would think, let's just get the action going a little bit here. Let me play Seminole Wind. I still love it.
Yeah, and it's great. It's a very melancholy sounding kind of song, and you know, it's very environmentally conscious, which is, you know, really strange to think about if you compare that to country music that is currently on the radio. You know, it's very different. It's a very different vibe in a number of ways. And like you're saying, I'm afraid the end result is people like him end up getting lost in the shuffle. And that's a shame because that is a truly fantastic song. Like, it's truly special, I think.
Yes. Bigger ideas, bigger subjects beyond just whiskey is the answer to all of my sorrows.
Right. And those songs have their places too, you know? But those songs also have their place, but they can't, you know, they probably shouldn't all be that way.
Dan, I also want to call out before I forget. You guys, I guess, partnered with Victoria Mitchell on a t-shirt design. This is a really cool t-shirt.
She's great. She does, you know, a good bit of graphic design in the area, does a little bit more for us. Yeah, she's actually the curator at the Hall of Fame here in town. I don't think a lot of people know how gifted she is at graphic design, but absolutely. Yeah, I love that design. I think she told me one time that she based it on The Great Wave.
Yeah, I was looking at the image. Would people still need to see you live to get their hands on that shirt or any merch related to the band?
No, no. We do have a site. It's actually down for maintenance right now because you wear many hats in a project like this, and I have been a very bad web developer lately. No, that is, the site is up. It is available, it'll probably be up again by the time this episode airs. We'll say that. There's a web store on there, and absolutely can order it there. Some other merch, it's coming, but it's not yet available. Because again, it's a really young project, and we just now started on that side of things. I don't want to say we didn't expect it to work well, but we were all kind of surprised by how consistently we were getting booked and how consistently people were enjoying these things, what we were creating in the shows. So we're really just now starting to get the gears turning on having merch out there and available. But that the t-shirts are out there. There's another design coming. Later this summer, early this fall, there should be, for the people that like collecting physical media, there should be a vinyl record available. Still real hesitant to say firmly on that one way or the other because, we're still waiting to find out exactly when we're going to be able to get that into production. Those plants have a way of getting really busy and really backed up, but that is coming. It just may not be as soon as I hope it to be. But yeah, the t-shirt's available and the website and everything is available. You can find us through Facebook, Instagram. Website is ghostriverrevival.com. It's there for anybody that wants to come find it. It really helps out small bands like ourselves. I was in another band for some time that toured extensively. And I'll never forget the day we had a Spotify royalty check, come in, and we had gotten something like 80,000 streams the quarter that was paying out for, or whatever amount of time it was. And I remember looking at that and going, if somebody buys a t-shirt, then we're better off than getting 80,000 streams through these streaming services. I think maybe the math was if somebody bought two t-shirts, if we sold two t-shirts at a show, it was more successful than what I considered to be at the time a fairly large number of streams. Man, that's a whole nother conversation. It's one of the things that's absolutely altered the landscape of the music industry, and I guess we'll find out in coming years if that's a positive or not. You buy a t-shirt, that's a tank of gas to get the band to the next gig. So that kind of stuff, if you're the kind of person that likes to go out to shows and, support local music, support touring bands, things like that, buying a piece of merch, it's hard to overstate the impact that can have on one of those bands.
I try to remind my friends too, when we go to concerts, visit the merch booth, find something you like. Even if you're looking around and you can't make up your mind, and they've got a sticker and you just want to get a $5 sticker or button or some of the low hanging fruit items, they appreciate all that stuff. You don't have to spend $50. And I think sometimes people get in their head that, oh my gosh, if I walk over this merch booth, I'm going to hand over 50, 60 bucks. There's usually some of those alternative items if you're running tight or you ran up a bar tab that was 50% higher than what you had budgeted at the beginning of the night.
And it's, just as you say, most bands that I'm aware of are conscious of that kind of thing. And, money, it gets tight. We're human, right? And it's important to have something on the table that somebody can pick up for a few bucks if they've decided they're going to get something, or if they just want to take a look and, see what there is, then, it's important to have an item there that they can pick up for a few bucks instead of dropping how much for a t-shirt, or, man, it's been a while since I've gotten hoodies priced, but I seem to remember the last time I looked into getting hoodies made, there was no way we were going to be able to get them made and sell them for less than 40 or 50 bucks. our cost of production was going to be pretty much right there. Well, I guess I should clarify. We try to use local small businesses to make our merch. We try to support the local community in that way. You know, I guess it depends on each individual band and their philosophy as far as merch goes and things like that. But yeah, we try to have things that are much less expensive because it can get out of hand real fast. That merch table can get out of hand real fast.
Dan, sometimes I will go to concerts and I will buy a t-shirt for my wife because she'll wear stuff that she has no idea what it's, you know, maybe I have to get her interested in the band or play a few songs for her. But people listening, if you've got a boyfriend, girlfriend, or brother, mom, dad, and they just, everybody needs a new t-shirt. So sometimes you don't have to think, oh, well, I don't know if I would wear it, but it's always a gift idea. Sometimes going up to the merch booth, think beyond if you're going to wear it or whatever. You probably have someone that would be happy to have a new shirt that you can't just walk into Walmart and come out with.
Man, I wish more people thought like you. that's fantastic. And that's an excellent point. It's a t-shirt, you know, even if you don't know anything about the band, like you're saying, even if you hate them, it's a t-shirt. It's not like hating the band makes it not a t-shirt, not something you can't wear, you know. I thought about an hour and it went by very fast.
It did. Well, Dan, you've been so gracious with your time. I have just been soaking up this conversation, and I'd love to have you back on. We'll probably...
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is maybe we can reconnect, because I didn't mention the Hagstrom bass.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we may have to talk about that later, but...
I'd love to. It's a little unusual, yeah. I'd be thrilled to. I'll spend way too much time talking about gear.
Yeah, maybe we can reconnect and just do some gear talk, maybe a 15-minute chat on that.
That sounds great.
Okay, well, folks, be sure to check out pretty much wherever your fingers are tapping. If you're on Facebook a lot, you can find Ghost River Revival. If Instagram is your thing, you know, check out Lindy Urban. A lot of good stuff here, and the website, as Dan mentioned. You guys, get out there, support your local concert venues. You're always, if you go when you can, you'll find new artists like Dan Williams and Ghost River Revival. And if you're in Florence, Sheffield, Muscle Shoals, I think you know where to go. Anything else, Dan, before we wrap it up here?
No, just thank you so much for having me, and I'll look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Well, thanks for being on Dan Time. Folks, you guys, everybody out there, have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next Sunday on the Dan Time Podcast. Thank you, Dan Williams.
Thank you.